In the years since my retirement, I've been researching my family history. Mine is a Southern family, and I began to wonder about our slaveholding history. So I started digging, and I uncovered truths, some of which I'd really rather not have to know, but I do. For example, one of my direct ancestors, one Lockie Collier, in 1778, was murdered slowly by his enslaved people. Wish I didn't have to know that. And of course, this research not only was about my family, but I had to learn as much as I could about slavery itself and American slavery. And that work has changed me. I've come to realize just how firmly America's racism is founded in its history of slavery. They're inseparable. And so to address racism, it is imperative that we also address our involvement in slavery. I'm sitting here trying to think of the name of the woman who wrote the book, but she closed it with, "The world is not healed in abstractions. The healing begins where the wound was made." To address our racist hearts, we must begin where the wound was made, in American slavery. So what was American slavery? Imagine this. It's a hot, humid day. You've been working in the cotton fields from, as they used to say, from can't see to can't see. Finally, came back to your cabin, sitting in front of the fire, thinking about the last time you saw your mother. You were 10 years old, sitting in the back of a wagon. Your owner, in order to settle a debt, had sold you. And you were driving away from that plantation to another one. And your mother was kneeling in the driveway, her arms outstretched. "Don't take my child. Please don't take my child." You rounded a corner. That was the last time you ever saw her. That is the face of American slavery. Brutish, inhumane, and very profitable. How profitable was it? Well, think about this fact. Every economic institution founded in the fledgling United States was either directly or indirectly created to encourage and extend slavery. If you're interested in the details of that, go read Edward Baptist's book, The Half Has Never Been Told. The United States, in 1860, just before the outbreak of the Civil War, owned a virtual monopoly on the world cotton trade. We controlled 60% of the world's cotton trade. And why were we able to do that? Because all that cotton was produced with enslaved labor. And cotton in the 19th century was the oil of that of the world's economy. Now, when I start talking about these things, there are a few things that almost always someone says, either directly or indirectly. For example, Slavery is long over, barely remembered. So just get over it. Nobody cares anymore. Well, I beg to differ with you on that one. That story I told, it's a true story. A true story. I was that little boy. And I am the man that little boy grew up to. And this is the book. If anyone's interested, there will be some there. It outlines our history of slaveholding and contains my reflections on that fact and slavery and racism in general. By the way, I never learned that old woman's name until I was 63 years old. No one ever referred to her except as Mary. Her last name was Jones. No one called her Mrs. Jones in my hearing. Another thing people always say is, well, just get over your guilt trip. You're not responsible for what your ancestors did. Or another version of it, we never owned any slaves, so it doesn't involve us. Well, I'll tell you, I beg to differ again. There are a lot of variations on that, but the fact of life is that when someone says something like that to me, they are always European American. Always. Never African American. Never. Now, there are two concepts of responsibility that are important here. On the one hand, of course, we are responsible for the things we do, for the actions we've taken or not taken. We're responsible to obey the law, to meet our commitments, to reconcile with people we wrong. So in this sense, of course, I'm not responsible for what my ancestors did. No one is responsible for the actions of another. But, there's another sense of responsibility. We're not only responsible for our actions, we are also responsible to one another. We are responsible to the culture we live in, to hand it on to our descendants as a better world than we received it. We are responsible to make this world a better place than we found it. We are responsible to support and participate in the organizations we belong to and keep them healthy. We're responsible to raise our children and grandchildren to be humane, loving, and generous adults. This second sense of responsibility to the future that we help to create and to pass on a reality that is less hate-filled and violent than the one we received. For the truth is that every one of us lives and is in and has inherited a world that is filled with racism and violence. And it doesn't matter where your ancestors came from or how. Doesn't matter whether your ancestors were slaveholders as mine were. It doesn't even matter if you were the immigrant. The truth is, we live in a nation that is rife with racism. And that racism is the direct descendant of American slavery. Do you doubt that? Well, think about that passage from W.B. Du Bois that I read a few moments ago, the two worlds that he lived in 1903. That divided consciousness had its roots in a hatred that was bred in the muck, mire, and blood of slavery. White America's contempt did not spring willy-nilly out of nowhere as the Civil War merged into Reconstruction and then Jim Crow. and what of 2019? Has anything truly essential changed since 1903? Does anybody in this room really think that ours is a post-racial society? Does anyone really think that the Republican treatment of President Obama had nothing to do with his being black? Does anyone really think that the rash of police violence against African Americans is merely an accident of statistics and has nothing to do with racism? Does anybody really think that the rash of visible hatred and violence and white supremacy has nothing to do with Trump's reckless rhetoric? Think about the racial stereotype of the dangerous, large, strong, lascivious, and angry black man. This stereotype has fed the lynching of every African American that was ever killed by a mob. And we Euro-Americans created it. Its actual history is a little bit hard to trace, but it clearly goes way back into slavery. It was already full-blown in Fanny Kemble's diary written in 1838 and 39. It was certainly alive and well in the 1950s and 60s and is responsible for the murders of the leaders of the Black Panther Party. And it is alive and well in 2019. We see it in the police violence against people of color and Trump's racist rhetoric and failure to act. We see it alive and well every single time someone walks down the street and sees an African American and is slightly afraid. It is alive and well. Why else could a young Euro-American walk around in public carrying an assault rifle and nobody even thinks to call the police while a young African-American boy is playing with a toy gun and is accosted, shot, and killed by Euro-American police? Why else? And that brings us to Black Lives Matter. Do black lives matter? Do black lives matter as much as white lives matter? Several years ago, there was a meme going around that answers that question. Nothing is more indicative of white supremacy than the fact that the very phrase Black Lives Matter is controversial. Now, I don't know whether this congregation has embraced the BLM movement. And I don't know how anyone in this room feels about it. I've heard Unitarian Universalists say everything from right on, absolutely, to Black Lives Matter is racist. I've heard Unitarian Universalists say that it should be replaced by All Lives Matter because, of course, all lives do matter. Well, all lives matter is fine as an ideal, as something to strive for, to work toward, to embrace as a guide that moves us toward the future. But as a description of the real world we live in, it is simply false. All lives do not matter in this country because far too often the lives of people of color do not matter to far too many Euro-Americans. The truth is that the overwhelming majority of cases of police violence are against African-Americans and other people of color. And this has been true ever since there has been an America. Most of my African American friends point out that all lives matter is just a way of hiding from the truth while trying to appear to be an ally. But until we embrace fully the truth that African American lives are in constant peril through police violence, through educational violence, through governmental violence, through cultural violence, and through all sorts of other forms of violence, all lives will not matter. Until we recognize the rage that burns in the souls of Americans of color and accept our responsibility, our accountability for it, all lives will not matter. Until we put aside our privileged place and open our hearts to what our neighbors of color are telling us, until we listen here with our hearts, not with our ears, but with our hearts, all lives will not matter. And so it is important to say over and over and over again, Black lives matter. Let me close with a poem I wrote several years ago. The sky opened. Fire fell in torrents and burned everything. The big house, the shacks, everything shriveled like forbidden graven images. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. It was not us, they will say. It was long ago. It was someone else. And who shall say, Thy people shall be my people, and those who are unloved shall be beloved? Who shall say that unless we do?